call to order the meeting of the Pensions Legislative Commission of Pensions and Retirement for March 10th, 2009. We have a quorum present. Tonight we have a number of single individual constituent bills as well as small group bills. The reason why we scheduled for this evening meeting is so that the legislators and the affected individuals would have, you know, would be better to come in. And obviously everybody would like to be towards the top of the agenda. We've had provisions in the past where we've tried to accommodate those individuals who've traveled the furthest to get here because they have a longer drive ahead of them, or if there's any special particular needs that we have. I believe, Senator Scogin, do you have witnesses that are here from your area?
I have one.
Okay, and where are they from?
Fergus Falls.
Okay, let's go. Okay, we'll start with number one on the agenda, Senate File 197, House File 318. And we also, there's also an amendment because apparently this issue deals with another similar situated person. So I told Senator Scogin to just get an amendment to, rather than a new bill. So this is number one on our agenda. Senator Scogin, welcome to the Pensions Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think we'll start with the Senate File 197, okay. And then we can amend.
Okay. What we'll do is, what we do here is we'll have our staff just briefly describe what the bill does, and then we'll turn it over to you for your testimony from your witness, and then we'll get into discussion of any issues that are related to it. So who has that? I believe, Mr. Martin, you've got the – okay. Go ahead.
Members, this is number one in your packets. This relates to an individual who's a part-time municipal liquor store employee. Exceeded the minimum threshold salary for mandatory coverage by PERA General, but was not reported to PERA in a timely fashion. More than the three-year statute of limitations has elapsed since the error was noted. There's no provision then administratively to bring the person into PERA coverage. The only way that the person can get service credit for the omitted period of time is by service credit purchase. The bill provides, entitles the individual to purchase service credit. The member would pay the past member contributions due and owing plus 8.5% interest. The employer, the City of Elizabeth, would be obligated to pay the balance of the full actuarial value of the benefit obtained by the service credit purchase. And the special authority would expire in 1 year if it's not utilized.
Okay. And apparently we have a second issue that came up with this one, too. Is that?
Senator, Mr. Chair, no. The amendment relates to a different person in the same area with a PERA problem, but it's not the identical one.
Okay. Well, okay. Senator Scogin, do you have anything to add as to that? We do have a letter from the City of Elizabeth. I think that this deals with that issue here for Janet Feuer.
Mr. Chair and members, that's right. At the time, the Elizabeth City Clerk has submitted a letter acknowledging the mistake that was made. And if you'd look at the last line, they understand the city may be liable for both her share and the city share because of that mistake. So I really don't have anything. She is not here tonight. Ms. Barnhouse is actually on my amendment, and will be testifying on that. But Ms. Feuer was not able to get down here tonight.
Okay. Who would make what payments under this bill? Would the city pay them all, or would the employee
Members, the purchase would be the member contribution plus interest would be the responsibility of the individual involved. The city would pay the balance of the full actuarial value of the service credit purchase cost. I don't know, but PERA presumably does know what the service credit purchase dollar amount would be. That might be pertinent
okay.
information.
Let's hear from PERA. Ms. Vanek? Welcome back to the Pension Commission. You'll need to identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanney, Director of PERA. The actuarial value of this additional credit is about $464. The obligation of the employee would be about $174, and the employer, the remaining balance of about $188.
Okay. Does PERA have any issues or concerns with this bill as it's presented?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. And there was no potential amendment suggested by staff. Okay. Is there a discussion on the bill? Any questions of members?
Do we have a House member up there, too?
We don't necessarily.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not required. Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Representative Kahn moves that Senate File 197, House File 318. Well, wait a minute. Let's deal with the amendment first. I'm sorry. We have an amendment to that, so let's back up for 1 second. This deals with another individual from Senator Scogin's area, but it's a different issue, I'm told. Okay, go ahead. Mr. Martin?
Members, the second item at packet item number one, the A tab, relates to an individual who has had service credit in MSRS, TRA, and PERA, was apparently given bad advice about retiring and whether or not the combined service annuity applied to her, has tried to straighten out her circumstance and has ended up with PERA determining that she is receiving more in annuity than she's supposed to receive and is trying to reclaim a portion of it. What the constituent wants to do is to be able to revoke her retirement applications with PERA and or with TRA, have the overpayment waived, and then at some future date I'll retire under the combined service annuity.
And this is regarding Sandra Barnhouse. We do have an email that Ms. Vanek sent to Senator Scogin. Senator Scogin, do you have anything further to add on this?
I really don't, but I do have Ms. Barnhouse here.
And Ms. Barnhouse, welcome to the Pensions Commission. Do you have anything further that you wish to add?
I'm just trying to read through this to see, you know, I'm trying to get Mary Vanek's perspective here, and I'm just reading the third paragraph.
Why don't we have Ms. Vanek come forward, and then it'll give you a chance to read through this. Ms. Vanek, did you wish to address this?
Mr. Chair and members, again, Mary Vanek, PERA. This is a really unfortunate circumstance. Ms. Barnhouse was a participant at one point in time of MSRS, TRA, and PERA.
Representative Murphy.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Vanek. I'm sorry, but I'm really uncomfortable with this procedure.
Okay.
On the amendment. I'm not uncomfortable with hearing the issue.
Sure.
But I think we should go with Representative Kahn's motion.
Okay.
And do the first case.
Sure.
And separate this completely from the Kahn motion and the first issue on Senate File 197, and then have a separate amendment to use the amendment as it is, but have it separate from 197 as an amendment to the omnibus bill.
We can do that.
And deal with it as separate subjects. Otherwise, we're going to get confused on precedent in the future.
Sure. And as I said, when Senator Scogin talked to me about it, and I misunderstood it. I thought that these were similar situations, and so I said just roll them in and don't have a separate bill, but I can see they are different ones. So let me back up a step. Okay, Representative Kahn moves that Senate File 197, House File 318, be adopted into the omnibus pension bill. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. We have now an amendment before us, which actually was, and I now see it was not, I thought it was an amendment to the previous one, and it is not. So this is a separate issue. So Representative Murphy has moved it. Ms. Vanek, did you wish to discuss this again? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a complicated issue, but I'll try to sum it up and make it understandable. Ms. Barnhouse served under state employment until 1998 and chose to start collecting her MSRS pension in, I believe it was 2007. Okay. And so MSRS computed her benefit as a standalone benefit with the deferred interest that she had earned on it. She was then working in para-covered employment, somehow got advice from someone on her staff advising her that she could actually collect her PERA pension under combined service and go back to work 30 days later.
No, they didn't tell me I could go back to work 30 days later.
Well, we'll have Ms. Vanek go through it, and if there's any problems with it, we'll go back to Ms. Morehouse.
So she decided, she made the decision to retire. And she also has TRA service in here, so it is a pretty complicated issue. But the bottom line is that our staff, for some reason, I don't know why, whoever calculated her benefit payment when it was time to pay her took the MSRS salary and calculated her para value on the MSRS salary, and TRA did likewise under what's allowed under combined service. And generally that's okay, but when you do that, that means MSRS can't give her the deferred interest, and that significantly reduced what MSRS could pay to her. So what should have been done was that her MSRS benefit stands alone, and that her para benefit and her TRA benefit could be combined using the salary in those two pension systems. That overstated her benefit. When we use the MSRS salary, it overstated her benefit significantly, about the tune of $145 a month compared to about $29 a month. When we caught it in the final check of her benefit after we'd already started paying her, we notified her that we had overpaid her, we have to recover those overpayments, and we've reduced her benefit. We have reduced her benefit. It is her desire to revoke her application, which is understandable because she is working in para-covered employment again and could earn additional credit to get a higher benefit in the future. So we don't oppose her revoking her application. Our attorney has advised us, however, that our law is very specific, that regardless of why the overpayment occurred, we are required to recover overpayments. And so as I understand the bill, we'd be able to do that when she retires in the future and recover that over her life expectancy, which if she retired, I looked it up, if she retired at age 68 or age 70, it would be a recovery over 18 to just under 20 years to the tune of about $335 to $365 a month. So it would be a slight reduction in her benefit for us to recover that overpayment.
So basically this would allow her, first of all, to revoke the application for retirement, but you'd still have to recover the overpayment at some point. Would she be up, if she chose to do so, could she repay that on her own as opposed to having it taken out of her future retirement?
Mr. Chair, yes, she could.
I see. And then it says, if elected, the recovery of a 436.92 by the general employee retirement plan is waived. What's the 436.92? Is that what she was overpaid then, or what?
Mr. Chair, that was the difference that we notified her of at the time. She has been receiving monthly benefits since that time. And if we wait till this all gets processed through July, her benefit payments will have amounted to $786.84. So that's really, if she revokes her application after the legislative process and this gets enacted, she'll have to repay us the total amount she's received to date.
Okay. Any questions, Ms. Vanek? Representative Murphy.
No. Ms. Barnhouse, yeah. Are you willing to make the repayment?
Well, I had actually hoped to get at least that first $346-some-odd deferred until I do retire. And then I've been saving up since this happened in order to buy back into the plan, and I've only saved up the remainder of that. I could probably do it, but I would really appreciate getting that first $350 deferred or $345 deferred.
Ms. Barnhouse, do you have any questions about what's going on here? Do you understand what
have any questions. And, in fact, I feel somewhat apologetic also because sure. I gave you a very strange situation to deal with. I acknowledge that.
Mr. Chair, just a question. Would interest accrue if she defers until she retires again? Or
Ms. Vanek? No.
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Vanek.
Depending upon the commission's desire, the line, page 2, lines 1 and 2 do
right.
waive the overpayment, so you'll have to address that depending upon what you decide to do with this.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Page 2,
yeah,
lines
yes.
1 and 2
right.
suggest that part of the overpayment be waived.
Yes.
And depending upon what the commission's desire is. Our position is we can't waive overpayments, but you certainly
oh,
have
I
the authority
see, okay.
To do that.
I see. Does PERA have a position on what on that?
I have one question.
Ms. Barnhouse.
When we talked about the interest payment, in terms of would it be to my advantage, interest-wise, to pay it all up front?
Mr. Chair, in response to Ms. Barnhouse's question, there is no interest on the overpayment.
That's overpayment. She would have to repay. Does she the overpayment itself?
Okay. So I guess the question is if page 2, lines 2-1 and 2-2 are in there, then that would forgive the overpayment, which is what you received. You received this amount of money. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the bill, I mean, the bill is drafted so that you wouldn't have to pay it. And I guess that's a question that we have to decide if you were overpaid, whether you should have to repay it or not. Okay.
Oh.
Is that?
That's the way it was drafted.
Right. That's how it's drafted. And obviously you would like it. I'm guessing PERA would not like that language in there. I'm guessing because they would, if you overpaid it, you want to be reimbursed for that. Okay, so it's up to the commission here. So what's the pleasure of the commission? Are we fully informed? Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
I move adoption of LCPR 0902A.
Okay. Discussion, Representative Murphy moves the amendment LCPR 0902A. Is there discussion on that motion? Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, being the newbie on the Pension Commission, I am wondering if waiving the overpayment would set any kind of a precedent for us, or, you know, this is a very small amount of money, but
yeah.
does it set a precedent if it's, you know, if there are a couple more zeros on there in the future?
Anything we do is going to be cited in the future. People do come back and say, well, 20 years ago you did this. They do that. It does seem to me that, you know, if there was an overpayment, it probably ought to be paid back.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the alternative to this, is from what I understand what Ms. Vanek said, was when Ms. Barnhouse retires, her pension benefit would be reduced by $3 a month. Was that what it was, $3 a month?
That's all.
For 20 years. So it seems to me that that's a really workable alternative.
Well, Ms. Vanek, if we adopted this with lines 2.1, 2.2, would that would preclude PERA from doing any recovery? I believe that means it's waived, right? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would defer to your staff because I think the language on page 1 speaks to the recovery over the life expectancy when she retires. And the language on lines 2.1 and 2.2
what does it say
then? Speaks about the waiver of this amount. So
that sounds inconsistent.
I defer to your staff who wrote that.
It sounds inconsistent, you know. I mean, how can you recover something if you've waived it? I don't know.
Mr. Chair, I'd prefer the waive part.
Well, of course.
You're looking for input.
But if the bill also says that they can recover it, what can you recover something that's been waived? So I don't know. I think we've got to fix one or the other.
Deferment means that you don't pay it until later.
Yeah.
I wanted to pay it when I started
sure.
retiring.
Yeah. But, yeah, the language says it's waived, which means you wouldn't have to pay it at all.
I know.
So I think we have to figure out which direction we're going in here.
Mr. Chair,
yeah,
does the staff have a suggestion of how we could fix this? The loophole there. And to do it like we talked about, have it deferred. And as it was said, stated $3 a month taken out for 20 years when she retires, so that to pay it back that way.
Where is, Mr. Chairman, where is that language?
On page 2.
Well, that's the waiver.
Where's the waiver?
Where's the recovery?
Where's the deferred language?
Members, the provision that provides for our recovering the benefit starts on page 1, line 29. If Ms. Barnhouse revokes her application for either PERA or TRA or both, then the benefit that she already has received would be recovered by subtracting it in the future when she does ultimately draw benefits.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative.
If you prefer not to have the waiving of the overpayment recovery, in addition to doing away with striking deleting lines 2.1 and 2.2, you also should on lines 1.6 and 1.7, the last half of that first sentence, right after the paragraph C reference, also should be deleted through but not including the period.
Yeah, the language that says may elect to have the recovery of renewed overpayment waived as provided in paragraph D. So we got to strike something out of here in order to make it consistent. So, well, I guess the question is, waive the overpayment or not? That's going to set the
Chair,
direction we're going. Representative Nelson.
I want to take a stab at this. On line, I move that we delete on starting on page 1.6, starting with and through letter D in parentheses, leaving the period, and then delete lines 2.1 and 2.2, so we don't set some future reference or a future precedent that we may regret it. Does that do what we want to do, or?
Let's get rid of this. Yes.
Get rid of that. Okay.
And get rid of
the waiver. I see. Okay. Okay. So this basically gets rid of the waiver. It would mean Ms. Barnhouse would have to pay it back either through sending money to the fund or have it deducted in the future. That's basically
after she retires.
Yeah, after she retires. So the motion, and we'll give staff direction to clean this up if we get it slightly wrong, but page 1 on line 6, after the parent C, strike and may elect to have the recovery of, and then a retirement annuity overpayment waived if provided in par D, and then page 2, delete lines 2.1 and 2.2. That's the motion before us.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pappas.
I think we certainly should as well apologize to Ms. Barnhouse that she had to deal with this complicated situation. It's so irritating.
Okay.
Nice to reward you by waiving it, but at least we'll defer it.
That's fine. I was only looking for a deferment.
Sure. So. Is there discussion on Representative Nelson's motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Representative Murphy moves the 0902A amendment. I'm sorry, Representative Kahn.
Would somebody read how 1.5 to 1.9 reads now? Are the C and D?
I believe it would start on 1.5. An eligible person specified in paragraph B may elect to revoke retirement annuity as provided in paragraph C, period. Because she's allowed to go back to revoke the retirement application. That's clear that we wanted to do that.
Mr. Chair? What Representative Kahn might be referring to is the plural E elections, that it would be now a single election on 1.7, the reference to elections plural.
Okay. Oh, I see. A singular.
Singular.
Good catch. Okay, so Representative Kahn moves it on page 1.7. The term elections be deleted, and we insert the word election. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, final word from my constituent.
Yes, Ms. Barnhouse.
I want to say thank you for dealing with this seemingly trivial thing, but it wasn't trivial to me. However, The real reason that I wrote to Dan Skogan was because of the very strange hoops that I had to jump through to get my pension in the first place. I was told that I would have to give up my job entirely, and so for a 30-day period, I gambled the job that has kind of been making a difference for me, really fairly optimistic that I would be rehired after a 30-day period. But the whole thing seems somewhat like a charade because, in a sense, this law was written to prevent double dipping, and yet it actually led me right into that situation because, and in fact, I received counseling to that effect that I might be able to quit my job and possibly return in 30 days, as many people do. And so I just would like you to revisit that part of it at some point. But thank you very much. I appreciate all the
Well, we can only deal with the issue we have before us. So then, let's see, Representative Murphy renews her. Did we vote on it?
No.
Representative Murphy renews her motion that the 0902A amendment, as amended, be incorporated in the omnibus pension bill. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. And thank you, Senator Skogan. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. House. Thank you.
I believe that Senator Bach and Representative Dill have a witness from Silver Bay who plans to go home tonight. So let's get that person on the road.
Simple one.
This would be number four. Number four on our agenda, Senate File 305, House File 122, MSRS Disability Benefit Application Filing Deadline Extension. Senator Bach and Representative Dill, welcome back to the Pension Commission. We just saw you on Friday.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
members, this is item number four in your packets. This relates to an MSRS general plan member who suffered a back problem while on the job, for whatever reason, did not apply in a very prompt way to MSRS for a disability benefit. When he did apply, he had exceeded the 180-day limit for filing disability benefit applications with MSRS and would like to have an extension of that time so that he can apply for a disability benefit application. If members remember back a couple of meetings ago, MSRS had a bill relating to disability benefit applications where an extension or a longer deadline period for MSRS Correctional, State Patrol, and MSRS General was adopted. So in the future, there will be a longer period of time, but this individual, there was nothing made retroactive by that earlier piece of legislation. So something still needs to be done if you want to address this individual's problem.
Okay. Senator Bach and Representative Dill, do you have anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we are here today, Senator Bach and I, before you with Mr. Jokola, and we have Mr. Bergstrom here as well, if necessary, to testify on the bill. And Mr. Jokola started work at the vet's home in 95, injured in 07, and frankly, without any disrespect, he had no notification that he should have made application to this, and frankly, possibly didn't actually have the ability to understand if he had been told. And he was told at a workman's comp hearing at a time that exceeded the 180 days, as I understand it, that he should be applying, and then subsequently did apply and then was denied. And of course the law provided for the denial. And so if you have any questions about this, Mr. Bergstrom could answer them, any technical questions as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Before we get to the testimony, if either Representative Loon or Senator Hahn is here, if you just come on up here, I got to ask you a quick question. Before Mr. Jokola, welcome to the Pensions Commission. Do you have anything further you want to add?
No.
Okay. Mr. Bergstrom.
Yep. Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Retirement System. It's my belief that Mr. Jokola was incapable of understanding the form and the deadline that he was required to file within that process. The board actually supports allowing him to apply for disability. He just didn't understand the process.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, as a member, or as the author of the previous bill in which we made MSRS General the same as the other plans, and we added another notification date in that time period, then that was precipitated by this case. And so I think it's in order, and I move adoption of Senate File 305, House File 122 be incorporated in the Omnibus Pension Bill.
Okay. Is there discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Representative Murphy moves that Senate File 305, House File 122. Now, we did have some amendments, but there were substantive amendments.
Members, the two amendments were here in case either the not knowing that the commission was going to act on the MSRS disability application bill, what the two amendments do is either set a consistent 3-year application for, or is it 18 months? Set a 36-month application period for all of the various plans, or do away with the time limit on disability applications as alternative general law changes.
We've already addressed that.
You've already addressed that in prior legislation. Gotcha. Okay. So this was to also raise that same issue.
Okay. So then Representative Murphy renews her motion that Senate File 305, House File 122 be incorporated in the Omnibus Pension Bill. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Bach and Representative Dill. Do we have any other witnesses who are here for anything tonight who came from great distances who have to return tonight? Because I think that the other issue ones are all from local area legislators. If not, then we've got three of those. So we've got Senator Wieger and Representative Lilly here on Senate File 223, House File 231. I thought, there they are. Okay. This is number two on our agenda. Mr. Martin.
Members, this is item two in your packets. This relates to an individual who is a state employee, terminated state employment, received a benefit estimate that included the impact of her deferred annuities augmentation for the period that she would spend until she qualified under the rule of 90. During that period, she went to work for the Roseville Public Schools, was covered by PERA. She initially, in her contact with PERA, it wasn't clear that she had a pending MSRS benefit payable. Her reemployment with PERA and her coverage by PERA, reemployment by Roseville, has disqualified her from receiving her deferred annuities augmentation as she had planned to receive. What the bill would provide for her to do is to be excluded retroactively from PERA for her Roseville teaching assistance service in 2006, and to regain eligibility for deferred annuities augmentation from MSRS General. She would get a refund of her PERA general contributions for the period that would now be excluded from pension coverage.
Okay. Senator Wieger and Representative.
There is an amendment,
yes.
The 098 amendment, which clarifies the birth date and date of employment.
Senator Wieger and Representative Lilly, have you had a chance to see this? Apparently, this is a technical amendment to correct the birth date and the date of initial employment of your constituent. So,
yes, sir.
Is there a motion to adopt that amendment? So, Representative Murphy moves the A090098 technical amendment. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion fails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Wieger and Representative Lilly, welcome to the Pension Commission. Do you have anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it was an excellent summary. And you know, the bottom line, Ms. Freemuth will be available to testify if there's questions. Put in nearly 20 years or nearly 25 years with the county, nearly a decade with the state. and then working part-time after retiring, she in effect reduced her pension by 10%. She had no idea that would be the consequence of working part-time as a teacher's assistant, and as a matter of fairness, we make this appeal.
Okay. Ms. Freemuth, is it Freemuth?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have anything further that you wish to add to that? Or
The only thing I'd say is short and sweet is that it never was my intention to in any way maximize or increase my benefit by taking the job with the school as a TA. I have a teaching degree, and I wanted, after I retired, to pursue volunteer opportunities or paid opportunities working with kids. And they were very personal reasons for taking the job. And I'm sorry, I just was totally unaware of the impact that may have.
Okay. Let's hear from the fund. Mr. Bergstrom, MSRS, or Ms. Vanek, I'm sorry. Ms. Vanek, did you wish to weigh in on this one? PERA General, yes.
Mr. Chair, members, Mary Vanek, PERA Director. On behalf of both of the funds, we believe this is the right thing to do. She was not aware that returning to work for a limited period of time that she would have to pay into PERA, and the law provides that if you reinstate in less than 2 years, then that service counts, and you lose all of that deferred interest. And it made a substantial difference in her benefit amount by losing the deferred interest. So the period of time she served in her teaching assistant position added no value and actually took away a great deal of value from her pension. So we think it's reasonable that she be allowed to back that out, the contributions refunded to her and to the school district, and she can receive her Rule of 90 benefit later this year expecting to.
So there's no loss to the fund or anything in any of this? Or?
Mr. Chair, no. Not really. We were anticipating paying this deferred benefit anyway.
Okay. Senator Pappas.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not understanding. What should she have done instead? Not taken the job as a teaching assistant?
Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, probably, or our understanding that if she couldn't make more than $425 a month in the limited time she was there, and she wouldn't have had to pay in, and mm-hmm. it wouldn't have affected the benefit.
Any other questions of either the witness or Ms. Vanek?
Is the bill now in shape to?
I think it's been amended to have the correct birth date and the correct dates of employment. So I guess the bill is now in shape. So, Representative Kahn moves that Senate File 223, House File 231, as amended, be incorporated in the omnibus pension bill. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Wieger and Representative Lilly. It's my understanding that the witness for Senator Hahn and Representative Loon, we may have some issues that we have to address here, medical issues. So let's go to number 8, Senate File 1311 and House File 1409. Senator Hahn and Representative Loon, welcome to the Pensions Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Commission. Appreciate your taking the opportunity to hear our bill. And we have Senate File 1311, House File 1409. And, Mr. Chairman, did you wish to have counsel go through the...
Sure. We'll have our staff go through the bill, and then Mr. Burek has this one, and then we'll hear from you. Mr. Burek.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a request to waive a requirement in PERA law that an individual, if there is a break in service, the individual has to return to PERA coverage for a minimum of 2 years before an individual is eligible to file for a disability. In this particular case, the individual has several periods of service, some for Hennepin County, some for Anoka-Hennepin School District. Most recently, the individual returned to Hennepin County employment starting in April 2007. If the individual had provided continuous service since that date, the individual would be eligible to apply for a PERA general disability in April of 2009. But there are several breaks in service, some before that period, some during that period. And one of the issues that I do raise is whether there's a self-help remedy here, in that if the individual could obtain service credit for those various leaves, the individual doesn't really need the bill because she would be able to apply for an annuity, a disability annuity, in April of 2009, which is probably sooner than this bill could pass.
Well, let's hear from the legislators and the witness, and then let's look at what our options are here. So, Sarah Hand, Representative Liu, do you have anything further that you want to add before we hear from your constituent?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we have anything in particular to add, but perhaps Ms. Selsner would like to make some comments about the circumstances. I know she provided some documents to the commission, so if there are questions, but...
Right. We were just given some documents here. Is it Ms. Selsner?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to the Pension Commission. You'll need to identify yourself for the record.
Beth Selsner.
Okay. Go ahead. Do you have anything further that you wish to add about the breaks in service that you had? PERA requires at least 2 years of service, must be provided after returning before you can apply for disability. So did you want to discuss the issue that we have before us here?
Well, I have several periods before 2007 where I was an employee of Hennepin County. I was out for, I believe, 3 months in 2001 when I had my first brain surgery. I went back to work, working from home part-time, actually earlier than I was supposed to. And I continued working there until the end of 2004, at which time I left the employment, chose to stay at home and be with my children for 2 years, and went back to work. Did not know that, we had not expected to get pregnant again. Had a period of 6 weeks of maternity leave, and then in July was diagnosed again with a recurrent brain tumor. And that was what resulted in this leave of absence now, is that I, December 10th, had brain surgery, and shortly after that, they found two new lesions that are currently still within my head that they have not removed yet.
Okay. Any questions, Ms. Solsener? President Nelson?
I'll get to
Ms. Okay. Mr. Burke, then the options we have are what, before we hear from Ms. Vanek?
Well, I have no... no amendments to this, so the option is either to provide the waiver or not to provide it.
Oh, I see.
The various policy issues are laid out there on page 2.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Vanek, and I guess one of the legislators will have to vacate. So. Okay, Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanek Para, we do not oppose the waiver of the two-year provision. Our statute under 353.031 subdivision 10 would prohibit the purchase of the additional service when somebody already knows that they have a disabling condition. They're not allowed to purchase additional service to add to the value of the benefit. So her option is to have you waive the two-year requirement so that we can then take her through the application process for disability benefits.
Okay. Representative Nelson, did you have a...
Yes, that kind of answers my question. I was going to ask how many months credit would you've had to purchase for number two here, for the self-help remedy, but you're saying that she can't, and I guess how many months and what the dollar amount of that would have been, but if you're saying by law she can't purchase them, then that's makes the question moot.
Okay. So the fund has no opposition, is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any questions, members? A motion.
I'll move.
Senator Pappas moves then that Senate File 1311, House File 1409, be incorporated into the omnibus pension bills. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Sarah Hand and Representative Loon.
Thank you, Chairman Betzel and members.
Okay, let's see. The other, Senator Anderson, and I didn't see Representative Hausman, but Senator Pappas is also a co-author, so she's here. So do we have anybody here on number 3, Senate File 281, House File 260?
Yes.
There we are. Okay. Senator Anderson, welcome back to the Pension Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is a bill that we brought forward 3 years ago to the Pension Commission, and we thought we'd try again. This is an issue of, it's about equity, and so we want to present this as an argument for equity and fairness. And I understand that we're asking for an exception from the law. Roberta S.B. Griffin is my constituent who was married to a Minneapolis firefighter for just under 2 years. And she's her husband died unexpectedly just 72 days before that two-year period, that two-year period that would have made her eligible under the existing law for pension coverage. She, what's unique about this situation is not only that she was married to him for almost 2 years and that it's really a close call there, but really that they lived together as husband and wife beginning in 1968. And so I think, again, as a matter of equity, their relationship as a couple lasted for 35 years, far beyond the lifespan of many marriages. And it's just, it's very, to me, it's an inequity that it doesn't recognize this relationship and allow her to benefit from those benefits that her husband earned in his years as a Minneapolis firefighter. Artis, her husband, had he did have a lot of medical issues all through his adult life, and so they existed while he was a firefighter as well as into his retirement. And so they had nothing to do with the decision to marry at the time that they got married in 2003. And Roberta cared for Artis for many, many years through a number of illnesses that he suffered, as and some of which were work-related and some of which were related to his service in the Vietnam War. I understand that Minneapolis doesn't like this bill. And the only thing I wanted to propose that was a little bit different is that it's now been 4 years since her husband died. It's been 3 years since we came and made this case before. And I wondered if it would be something that we could propose that perhaps if we just looked forward rather than retroactively, that would make it a little easier for the Firefighters Fund to consider supporting this. And so I'm just going to propose that the benefits would just go forward rather than retroactively. And I have not talked to the representatives about that, but I just wanted to suggest that that was an option as somewhat of a compromise, because I understand this would require an exception to the law. And obviously, members, you're very, very good staff who are very detail-oriented here and have laid out the precedents. And there were two precedents that were similar where exceptions were made, although none of them had relationships like this. This is a 35-year relationship that we're talking about. So those were two exceptions that were made under law, and then there was one unfavorable precedent. So, Mr. Chair, we're just kind of at your mercy and asking for an accommodation to be made for an unusual circumstance that, again, I think is about equity and fairness.
I didn't give Mr. Burke a chance to describe the bill. Mr. Burke, is there anything that further that we need to know about the background of this bill?
Not really, Mr. Chairman. The policy issues are laid out beginning on page.
And actually, Senator Pappas and Senator Rosen are new to the Pension Commission, but I think most of the other members had previously heard this. What year did we hear this? 2006.
2006.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Then I heard it, but that would have been before Senator Olson arrived here. So some of us heard it. Let's hear from the affected fund here, MSRS.
Would you like to give?
I'm sorry. Let's give her a chance. Yes, I'm sorry. I got a little bit ahead of myself.
Thank you,
Ms. Griffin. Welcome back to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi. Good evening. What I'd like
say
to
say, yeah.
Roberta S.B. Griffin. And what I'd like to say is, I have. taken care of artists from, in many cases, in the last one, he suffered a stroke in 2000. And I took him daily to the VA so that he could work out and recover from that stroke. And you couldn't even tell that he had had a stroke. And I didn't marry him at that time. And after all these years, I finally thought, listen, you have a brain. You've been with him for all these years. I mean, where else would you go? You've been together for 35 years, and he's still willing to marry you? That's kind of an unusual situation. Usually people are ready to toss you out the door by that time. But anyway, and what the idea is, anyway, when you take care of a person and in retirement, is you want someone that cares about you and is willing to look after you. And that's even stated here. And also, I have a letter that was written by Robert Klausner to Wally Shermer, the Minneapolis Fire Relief Association executive secretary. And they're talking about, although not applicable to public sector plans, the Retirement Equity Act, which governs marital property rights to ERISA pensions, provides for a minimum of 1 year marriage duration for survivor benefits. So I made over 1 year. I know this isn't the Minneapolis Fire Relief Association, but we were almost married for 2 years, and it was my fault that we hadn't been married previous to this time. And I guess really that I don't know what else to say. I mean, I feel that I took good care of him and that we both were comfortable and loving to each other. And I think that this is, and that a retirement plan should take care of someone that has cared for a person. And I think that, I don't know, I think 2 months, 10 days short of 2 years is, I don't know, it's hard to fathom for me anyway. But that's really all I have to say.
Sure. Well, and you know, we appreciate your persistence, Ms. Griffin. You know, as we discussed, I think last time we had the bill, that piece of paper they call a marriage license does bring a lot of rights and responsibilities with it. So it does matter. I mean, you and Archie may have been together for 35 years, but as long as you weren't married, you didn't have those rights and responsibilities that the state requires of people when they have that marriage license. And we do have a waiting period in between so that you know, people don't enter into sham relationships and so forth, whether it should be 1 year or 2 years or whatever. You know, we do have long respected that there has to be some type of period. There's nothing often fair and sometimes in pension issues, but Sir Pappas, do you have something?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we could look at this as the what was the reality kind of on the street. If Ms. Griffin can prove that her and Mr. Griffin actually lived together for 35 years, did they own a house together? It's my understanding they had a child together. I'm sure she has documentation of the, because of all those 35 years, they might have had joint checking accounts, joint savings accounts. I think it is, I agree with you, Mr. Chairman, that people need to know that it's better for them to be married. And we know there are a lot of people in our society that cannot legally marry, and it creates a problem for them in these situations and others. So I think we need to look at the intent, which is that the surviving spouse, the intention is for there to be a pension benefit for the surviving spouse, and they were spouses, if you will. And I think that the fund could provide that. She has to prove that, and I'm sure she can, based on what I've heard. But I really think it is not, in this particular situation, that we should look at what's the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, we don't recognize common law marriages in Minnesota. Sarah Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would just say the thing that concerns me about these kinds of situations when we have people who come and want kind of an exception based on an equity type of an argument is that from what I've learned here, you know, pensions are real sort of finite things that have to be kept actuarially sound based on kind of cold, hard-blooded types of facts, like how many people, they have to be able to predict in order to know how much money to put in and what's going to be paid out. And if we start opening the door to something on fairness types of arguments, it's really hard to, without those something definite like a marriage certificate. And I guess I would view it even, you know, just a little bit differently than, you know, if we had recognized something different to begin with in how the pension was set up, then we could do that. 65. But if we don't have a definite parameter and we have everything based on the equities of a particular situation, then it seems like where would you ever draw the line in fairness to the next person? So that's kind of how I view it. I'm concerned about being fair across the board. And whenever you draw a line in one place, there's always going to be someone that was almost there. But if we move the line back 2 months, then what about the next person who's only 2 months away from that line and so forth? I just think it sets a precedent that would be really hard to then turn away the next person with an equally valid type of argument.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm torn by this. And in a lot of ways, you're describing my mother and my father's pension, my father, because my father died. Actually, I had to quit working less than 2 months before he got his 10-year ERISA pension. And therefore, when he died 6 months later, my mother got nothing. And so I have sympathy for what you're saying, but as Senator Olson said, at some point you have to draw a line or a fence, and we have to, you know, there's always, no matter where you draw that line, there's always going to be somebody just on the other side that, you know, where our hearts may want to extend and pull them in. If you don't have some fence there that the plans can base their actuarial numbers on, and we can invest the proper amount of money, and so the plan stays solvent. And that's what we have to do as a pension board, make sure that the plan stays solvent so that the other thousands of people that are collecting these pensions can continue to collect them. Then we're going to be in big trouble. So while I have great sympathy, I have problems moving the line even 2 months because, as Senator Olson said, if we can move it two more days and then two more days and then another month, and pretty soon there is going to be, if you can marry them before they pass away, they're going to get the pension. So that's a concern I have.
Reverend Kahn.
Well, I can't resist telling the first thing I ever learned about pensions, which was when, and particularly that's brought on by talking about the Confederate pensions that are still being paid in 1976. This was actually when I was in elementary school, and our teacher came in that day and said we had reached a very important milestone that day.
Documentation.
We had paid off the last pension from the War of 1812, which seemed very much further away somehow than the Civil War does. And what happened was that a young boy, at that time he was a drummer boy at age 15 in the War of 1812, lived well into his 80s, married a very young girl who had now just died in the late 1940s or something like that. And so, you know, this concept of the length of pension, I think before I was on a pension commission, I always referred to that as the story of the cost of war. It's never ending. As soon as I learned about pensions, I just realized that the importance of pension policy. And the problem is, once you've been on this for a while, you see that everything you do sets a precedent for something else that will happen. And even though this seems very unfair, and the person seems very deserving. I mean, every time you break that line, you're going to have an argument for the next person, and it gets harder to remake them at each time. So I think I have to agree with saying that's what we don't have a law for common. We don't recognize common law marriages in Minnesota as we do in some states, and this is. And I think that we need to keep our lines firm. And it's not that this one is so terrible, it's that every time you break it, it makes it easier to break it for the next one.
I'd like to hear from the fund, Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association. Is somebody here from the fund? Here. Welcome to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Commission members, my name is Walter Shermer. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association. And this issue has been in front of us several times. And in each case, the trustees are all sympathetic to the situation. It's not as if, we don't have hearts. We do, but we recognize, as Mr. Nelson stated, or Commission Member Nelson stated, that we have to balance whatever we do against the rest of the group. And I think a good point is that to show what our group is like, our pension is like, is we actually pursued the law that would even allow Roberta Espy to be here today, because she was married after he retired, and there's no other pension fund that I'm aware of that allows that. So, I mean, we were trying to reach out for our people and to provide for them in just these cases. This is a unique situation, and the 2 years limitation, that wasn't something that our fund determined. That was something that was determined over years of negotiation and debate within the Pension Commission. We had it at 5 years to begin with, and then it went down, and then it went finally ended up at 2. I mean, that's just, I think that's very, very fair. And when someone doesn't make that 2-year limit, there's not much we can do about that. We did everything we can to even give them a chance to be there, speaking for the fund. And the trustees of the Relief Association have requested that I be here for this hearing and let the commission members know that it's their wish that the commission would just abide by the laws that are currently in place.
Any questions, Mr. Shermer?
Yes.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand, because had Mr. Artis not passed away, he would have collected the pension that he paid into for many, many years. So you've kind of accounted for that. And second, I think this is a very narrow exception, because how many cases are we really going to get where somebody was in a common law marriage, which is not recognized in Minnesota, for 37 years? I mean, I don't think that's setting such a huge precedent. If someone comes forward in another 5 years and they've been with a similar situation, I'd be shocked if if it happens again. So
I don't know where you said, but
I think we should do this.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shermer, you said that Artis was already collecting his pension?
Yes.
Did I hear him? Mr. Chair, Mr. Shermer, If he had been married and collecting his pension, would he have taken a deduction in his pension for the survivor benefits? Or was my understanding of most of the pensions, when you elect the survivor benefit, it reduces the amount you're going to get each month? Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, it would depend on if he took an option. If he just chose a regular straight out spouse benefit, then there would be no reduction to his benefit.
And we've had a couple of those issues that have come forth one way or the other, where somebody particular with husband didn't tell the wife what he was doing, and he collected the full pension, and then he died, and the widow got nothing. So,
yeah,
those things have happened. We do have a technical amendment. It was called to my attention. Just we should at least get the bill in the shape that it needs to be, and the 2A amendment just corrects the date of the eligible person from 35 to 36. That's a technical amendment, so we should take care of that, Lisa. So Representative Murphy moves the adoption of the 2A technical amendment. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The 2A amendment is adopted. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to point out that Artis Griffin was only 63 years old when he died. And so it is clear that the firefighters fund, whatever their actuarial predictions were for, or basis was for his pension, they only had to pay it for 2 years, and it certainly would have been accounted or predicted to be much longer than that based on his lifespan. So I do think, as I said, yes, we're asking for an exception to the law. I understand all the comments that have been made about the dangers, that slippery slope, but I also believe, as Senator Pappas said, that this you're not going to see this type of circumstance again, and I could ask if that's something, the type of thing that the firefighters have ever seen before, this kind of exceptional circumstance where you've had a common law relationship or marriage for decades.
Okay.
That was and then just falling short of the law for a couple of months. It just seems like a pretty unusual set of circumstances, and that the husband was very young when he died.
The bill does have a local approval clause by the city of Minneapolis, so the city would have to approve this because there would be some fiscal impact to the city. Is there anybody here from the city of Minneapolis who wishes to be heard on that issue? I see. Okay. Welcome to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm the IGR director for the City of Minneapolis. The City of Minneapolis does support the pension, the Firefighters Relief Association on this bill.
So you oppose the bill? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Representative Kahn.
So again, with the local approval clause, it seems that to put this in our pension bill would just be delaying the inevitable. And we've turned it down once before, and I guess I think we should continue to do that.
Okay. There would be a motion to adopt it, or if there's no motion, we'll just move on to the next issue then. Is there a motion? I hear none. Well, thank you, Senator Anderson.
All right, well, thanks for the time and for considering.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to the next item, which is number 5, Senate File 605, House File 757, DOT Pilots Transportation Department Aircraft Pilot Disability. I didn't see Senator Jungbauer in here. He's an author, but we don't necessarily need that. Representative Murphy is the House author by request. Let's see. This would be Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chairman, this is number 5 in the list on your agenda. What the bill does is it revises a very specific provision in MSRS general law. It's a provision specific to pilots at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And it revises the provision by removing any mandatory retirement age for pilots. Right now in the law it is age 65, so that's simply stricken. It also has a revision which permits disability applications after age 62. There's also a revision to have disability benefits, if they occur, at least a portion of them, be paid from the general fund. Right now, this is a very unusual provision under which if one of these pilots becomes disabled, any disability benefits that would be paid to the individual are paid from the state airports fund. So that would be revised to have some of the benefit, a portion of the benefit, paid by MSRS General instead. And the provision is also closed to new hires. Mr. Chairman, I would suggest, as a way of tightening up the general drafting, that the Commission consider amendments. The 1A amendment, which is a delete everything amendment, it adds an effective date. It specifies at the beginning of the provision that this provision is closed to any new hires, and it revises the disability subdivision to clarify better the MSRS responsibilities. There's also an alternative to that, the 2A amendment, which I can discuss if there's interest.
First of all, is there anybody here other beyond the fund directors who wanted to be heard on this one? We'll hear from the fund director after any witnesses testify. Is there anybody who's here on this bill? Mr. Bergstrom is. I don't see anybody else coming in here. So, I'm sorry. Somebody else here. We need to get you to the witness table. Welcome to the Pension Commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commission members. I'm Karen Van Dyke, Labor Relations Manager at Department of Transportation. So I'm here to answer any questions you might have. This proposal was developed by us as well as MSRS and the former Department of Employee Relations, which is now Minnesota Management and Budget Office.
Well, it's not been approved by the legislature. No. They call themselves that. Yeah. They call themselves that. But Representative Kahn and I have the oversight of the Department Finances Budget. I'm sorry, I get your name again. Could you say it again?
Karen, K-A-R-I-N,
uh-huh.
Van Dyke, V-A-N-D-Y-C-K.
Okay. And so this initiative came out of MnDOT, is that?
Correct.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand. Okay, we're waiving the mandatory retirement age for pilots. How old could they be to fly then? I mean, I would be a little bit concerned.
Basically, what this does is conforms. We used to have a policy which had a mandatory retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
In 2007, we did have an age discrimination case, and part of that settlement was to revise our policy to eliminate the mandatory retirement age. It was also revised to include the FAA medical certification, so those pilots need to go through biannual physicals. So at any point during that process, it would be determined that they could not fly. Then that is when they'd become disabled. At this point, the youngest pilot is 59, so by 2010, only one pilot would still have that special disability coverage.
Okay. Hey, Ms. Van Dyke, have you had a chance to look at the proposed amendments? There's a 1A and a 2A amendment that are different ways to look at this bill. Have you had a chance to look at them?
I have, Mr. Bergstrom.
Okay.
And I reviewed those.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts or comments about either amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think
Mr. Bergstrom.
My name is Dave Bergstrom, the director of the State Retirement System, and I think 1A puts the bill in the order. We have looked at this. We worked with the department on closing out this plan. We're very comfortable. The employee and employers are paying a slightly extra contribution already. And because of the age of the participants, it all seems to work very well.
So MSRS is in favor of the bill as amended. Okay.
Representative Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 605, Post File 757, with Amendment 1A. 6051A be passed and included in the omnibus pension bill.
Okay. Why don't we adopt the delete all amendment and then adopt the bill? Okay. So Representative Murphy moves the delete all 1A amendment. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard on this bill? Representative Murphy renews her motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The 1A amendment is adopted. Then Representative Murphy moves that Senate File 605, House File 757, as amended, be incorporated in the omnibus pension bill. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Van Dyke. Okay, the next item is number 6, Senate File 669, House File 741. permitting Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association and Minneapolis Police Relief Association membership in PERA. Mr. Burrick.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding of this bill, and that's looking at the language of the bill itself, which would be the very last thing in your packet. What it's doing is it's adding Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association and Minneapolis Police Relief Association to PERA's governmental subdivision provision. Now, under PERA law, employees of governmental subdivisions are required to be members of PERA unless they are covered by some other plan. So what this appears to be, then, is an effort to place the staff of the Minneapolis Fire Relief Association and Minneapolis Police Relief Association into PERA, but not the members of the Relief Association themselves, since they are covered by a different pension plan. What I would suggest you consider is a delete everything amendment, which is Senate File 669-1A. And what that does, the 1A amendment should be immediately before the bill. What that does is specify a little more clearly that this is covering only the administrative staffs of those relief associations, okay, and not the members themselves.
Okay, let's hear some testimony then. Mr. Rice, Mr. Shermer, who wishes to testify?
Mr. Chairman, Brian Rice, attorney for both MPRA and MFRA with me here. Mr. Shermer, the executive secretary of the MFRA, Minneapolis Firefighters, and Mr. Larry Ward, he's the president of MPRA. If I could just briefly address the bill. This is, as Mr. Burrick indicated, I think the section, amendment 1A is in order. The intent of the legislation is to just provide coverage for the staff members of the corporations, the Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association and the Minneapolis Police Relief Association. The Minneapolis firefighters have one staff employee. Long-term employee of the association, and the Minneapolis Police Relief Association has a full-time executive director and a part-time accountant. Mr. Shermer is an employee of the Minneapolis Fire Department, and he's detailed to the duties of executive director by virtue of his office, and the city pays his salary, but the Relief Association pays the salary for the one full-time the other full-time employee with the Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association. Minneapolis Police have a full-time executive director who's been a long-term employee and a part-time accountant who used to work with the State Auditor's Office and basically does the accounting function for the Relief Association. They're long-term employees, and actually this was, as I was over the summer reading some pension legislation, I noticed that employees, the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund Association, are allowed to join PERA. There are a number of other quasi-governmental entities, League of Cities, League of Counties, other organizations that serve a government function are also included under the PERA umbrella. I brought this to the attention of the boards. They're supporting it. Currently, both associations pay an 8% contribution to these, really just two individuals, or maybe it's three. Does Sharon North have coverage through the Relief Association, Mr. Ward?
Yes.
She does for her salary. The associations each pay 8% to a money purchase plan, defined contribution plan. The employees do not make a contribution. If the pension commission were to adopt this and the legislature to approve the legislation, the association would pay, actually see a reduction in its contribution for their employees' pension from 8% to 6.63%, and the employees would, instead of making no contribution, would pay a 6% contribution. Obviously, the benefit of the PERA plan is it's a defined benefit plan, I think the board thought that this was an option that should be have the employees to look at. I would add, just in closing on my comments, the funds would support the 1A amendment and the 3A, 4A, and 5A amendment would be, we think would be in order. I think Ms. Vanek should be called on those. Yep. The one that we would have trouble with would be the adding a local approval clause and having the city of Minneapolis approve it. I mean, this would, we don't see this as costing the city anything. It's actually reducing the expenditures the fund would make from 8% to 6.63%. And really, it's an administrative decision of the board. They're the, these are employees of the relief associations, not of the city of Minneapolis.
So are the three individuals, and the staff memo talks about Renee Tessier, Cheryl North, and Kathy Morcred.
Yes.
Are they in any pension plans right now?
Mr. Chairman, they are in a money purchase plan that the funds buy through. I think one is through Wells Fargo for the police, and the other one is through Union Bank.
Right, Union Bank and Trust.
Union Bank and Trust, where they make an 8% contribution. And I believe both employees have the ability to do a 457 plan through one of the providers because they've the funds are able to qualify in the not the state's 457, but I think it was either an Aetna or a Great West 457. That's a voluntary, you know, contribution plan.
Is that something that's offered by the city of Minneapolis then?
No, it's Mr. Chair, it's the 457 products that, you know, predated 1971. If you could meet the test of being a governmental entity, you the individuals would make their own contribution. It would be like an IRA, kind of equivalent of an IRA.
Well, we will want to hear from both PERA and the city of Minneapolis. Are there any questions of Mr. Rice or Mr. Shermer or Mr. Ward? Anything further? Okay, well, let's hear from Ms. Vanek and Mr. Rainier. So I would like to know what the Minneapolis position is since there is an amendment for local approval clause. So, Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, Mary Vanek, para-director. I had our attorney review the statutes governing the two relief associations and all other applicable material. We do not object to the two plans being added as governmental subdivisions so that the staff can participate. We do support the 4A amendment because we certainly would want an opportunity to counsel the individuals so they understand the difference between the plan they're currently participating in and the option to choose PERA. And you have in the past, when a new group has come in, allowed them the option of making an actuarial purchase of their past service, either a portion thereof or all of it. And we want an opportunity to counsel them on the cost of that, the expense of that, and what funds, if any, could be rolled over to help purchase that service.
We have a couple of amendments. There's a 1A amendment. Apparently, it's technical and or kind of a rewriting of it. Do you have had a chance to look at that?
Mr. Chair, yes. The 1A amendment puts the bill in better form.
Okay. And there was a 5A amendment that Mr. Rice said that they support, which would permit full actuarial purchases of service credit and PRA. Do you have a position on that?
Mr. Chair, we wouldn't object to it. It's full actuarial value, and you've allowed it for other groups that have come in.
Do you have any ballpark idea what it might cost?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a clue because I don't know salaries or service. Or,
but it probably could be very expensive.
It'll be very expensive.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, too, it's very expensive, and the market has gone very low. So I think the choice for Ms. Tessier, Margaret, and North would be a tough one.
Okay.
I mean, a year ago, it might have been an easy call, but now finding the money in those, you know, the plan, the money purchase plan they have now, if it would qualify, even would probably be a big stretch for them.
Okay. As Mr. Rainier is coming up, Mr. Burr, could you describe the 2A amendment? I get a local approval clause at City of Minneapolis and proposed 3A is an alternative. What does 3A do?
It would allow you to specify some other effective date other than day following final enactment and other than a local approval clause.
I see. Okay.
Any other amendments?
Gotcha. No, I just curious. Mr. Rainier, did you want to testify from the City of Minneapolis, because as I say, there's an amendment for a local approval clause. I think we'd like to hear what the city's position is on that.
Mr. Chairman, the city has for a long time has had a supporting local approval clauses, and continue with that policy.
But Mr. Rice, you would not like to see that. Is that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. First, we think that it's if this were an issue that affected the city, there might be a case they could make for it, but really it's the fund's governance issue, and as I said, if it passes and the employees make the selection, the contribution of the fund will go from 8% per employee down to 6.63%, so it would save money. Mr. Ranieri is a good friend, but let's say the relationship between the fund and the city is not as good as our relationship.
Okay. Any questions of any of the witnesses? What's the pleasure of the commission? We've got a couple of amendments. Okay, let's start. Okay, there is a move to 1A amendment. Representative Kahn moves the 1A amendment, basically to rewrite the bill to put it in better shape. Discussion on that motion. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The 1A amendment is adopted. Further,
I move the 3A amendment.
The 3A. Now, if we do the 3A, we have to have insert an effective date. 5A. Now, 4A, PERA is okay with 4A. They support that. Okay.
5A.
Okay. Both amendments? Okay. Let's do one at a time. Representative Cobb moves the 4A amendment. Discussion on the 4A amendment. Hearing none of those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Representative Kahn moves the 5A amendment. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none of those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. The 5A amendment is adopted.
Then we need the 3A also?
No.
We've done 1A, 4A, and 5A.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the bill.
Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 669, House File 741, as amended, be incorporated in the omnibus pension bill. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay, thank you, Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Last item, number 7, Senate File 750, House File 982, revise allowable service credit for job share participants. Mr. Martin.
Members, this is the last item, item number 7 in your packets. It relates to the general plan of the state, our retirement system. It applies to 10 individuals, 5 of whom are active members and 5 who are our retired members, according to the information that we've been given by the former Department of Finance and the...
Still Department of Finance.
Potentially former and the general in the state retirement system.
Representative Kahn.
In the House, we've informed them that every time that still
that term
Department
is used,
finance does not specifically use that term, but it means $10,000 from their budget.
I sometimes call them the department formerly known as finance, but they didn't like that either. But Mr. Martin.
Members, this relates to a program that operated from 1980, sometime into the 1990s, the job share program. And in MSRS law, there was a specific provision for how to handle service credit for job share participants. And when part-time employee service credit provisions elsewhere in MSRS law were modified and made somewhat more generous, the job share service credit provision was not made more generous. And the individuals who were employed for at least half time, who would have, had they not been in the job share program but simply employed part-time under the other provision in MSRS law, would have been treated differently, more generously. They're suggesting that they should be treated like all other half-time or greater part-time state employees. Again, as I mentioned, 5 of the individuals are active members, and 5 are already are retired. The recrediting of their service credit would provide for a increase in the benefits for other retired members, but not a retroactive benefit payment, simply a prospective benefit payment in a larger amount. There is someone here from the Department of Finance, and there's also a union representative here.
Okay, let's see. Let's hear from the Department of Finance first. Mr. Larson, welcome back. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Paul Larson. I'm the Assistant
Commissioner for Minnesota Management and Budget. I'm here in support of the association's attempts in this legislation. I'll give you a little bit of the background. I became aware of this about 3 years ago when there was legislation introduced to address this issue, and the commission had concerns about just how big this iceberg was with respect to employees that had been on the job share program. What I did at that point was I developed a plan in which I sent letters out to all of the state agencies asking the HR directors to identify any individuals that they had as job share employees, and I also provided them with a list of the names that we had in our office. With that information, I then provided that to the Minnesota State Retirement System to see whether or not we could reconcile the names of the employees who had been on the job share program. And it's taken me about 2 years to do this project and get it reconciled. And what we have concluded is that there were approximately 150 or so employees that were in the job share program, and during that period of time, all but 10 of them worked the minimum 40 hours a pay period and received the full employer contribution for service credit. The 10 individuals that we're talking here were, in fact, prorated on the service credit. What this legislation would do is give them the full service credit that the other job share people enjoyed in this legislation. I think one of the other components about the job share legislation is that during that period of time, we prorated them on health insurance. And I think that's really where the focus was on that. But it was in about the mid to late 1980s in which the contribution for health insurance changed. And so as a result of that, the job share program became meaningless from a benefit point of view, and no one participated in it. So I believe, you know, the one thing I want to emphasize, and that is that all of the employees, and I insisted on this, all of the employees worked a minimum of 40 hours a pay period. So the contribution level that they paid, if they would have been part-time employees at 40 hours a pay period, would have been the same. So there's really no cost associated. I understand there is an impact of the pension plan in as Mr. Martin has described it, but I want to emphasize again that if they would have been part-time employees, their contribution would have been the same as if they were job-sharing employees, and they would have received the full service credit. And it's these 10 people that we need to correct.
There's an amendment, but it's
only if you're trying to... Oh, I see. Okay, any questions, Mr. Larson? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did hear about this one before, and I've read through the materials, and one of the things about this situation that strikes me as maybe different than a situation based on, you know, just fairness and that thing that's... I think when we've looked at cases before where the state has made a certain representation to someone, we try to honor that representation. You know, like if either we made a mistake in how we handled something or we gave people a reason to believe that they should anticipate something. And I didn't hear the Tenney testimony about this, but I know there's information in the materials about the documentation that was given to these employees leading them to believe that they would get this full service credit. And I wonder if, do we have that available, or could you describe or address that? So that's one question I have. And then the other one is, do we know if these numbers that would have to be absorbed can be comfortably absorbed without putting these funds in any kind of jeopardy, or, you know, is it going to make a big impact on them, or how much of an impact would it make?
And if we need to go that direction, the 1A amendment would talk about how the what departments had to contribute to do that, I think. So, Mr. Larson, in response to Senator Olson's question?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, in response to that, we are handing out a document right now that was provided to the job share employees. And if you will look on, I believe, page 3.
Third page.
I've circled the relevant language were. This was the information that was provided by the Department of Employee Relations at the time. And as you can see, when it came to retirement, it said same as all other state employees based on salary. The other thing I think also in response, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, and that is that in anticipation of this question, I called the agencies for which these employees are employed at, the five active employees, and I asked if they would go through the personnel file to see if there was any letter in there that described what the benefit set was for the job share, and there is no information at all that would have articulated the formula of a prorated pension annuity. So based on the what I think is the guidelines that were submitted then and the lack of any information in the employee's HR file, I believe that these employees, and I have talked to some of the employees, and they had no idea that they were going to be subject to the proration until the time they inquired about their pension. I've even had situations where I've had one employee that was job sharing with another employee, that one employee received the full service credit and the other one didn't for the same job.
Well, the question is, Mr. Larson, we go ahead and welcome the Pension Commission. Did you wish to testify, Mr. Pugliese?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, in the interest of time, I'm just going to be real brief because I think I'd be repeating what Mr. Larson already said.
You need to identify yourself for the record.
It's Richard Kujewski, the Legislative Affairs Director with MAPE. We're just looking for some equal treatment between employees actually working part-time for the state of Minnesota who are in a non-job share position and those who were working part-time, half-time, or better in a job share position in regards to the pension credit years of service. So other than that, I can stand for any other questions. I'm not going to – I'd just be repeating what Mr. Larson already said.
Representative Pound.
Maybe this was said and I missed it. I think I was actually one of the people responsible for initiating the job share program. And why did it – what caused its demise? I mean, it still seems like it's a good idea.
Well, we've got a call. We'll vote.
Okay.
Mr. Larson, do you know what caused its demise, its untimely demise?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, what caused the demise is that the employer contribution for part-time insurance has now gone to 65% of the employer contribution for people who work 40 hours a pay period. So as a result of that, by being a part-time employee for purposes of insurance, they enjoyed a better benefit, and that's what caused the demise.
Mr. Bergstrom.
You don't need to be job sharing in order to get to work part-time. So you get the same, you just become a part-time employee, and you don't need the complications of job sharing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, that is correct.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom, the director of the state retirement system, and we did carefully look at the files or the names that were given to us. Of the people that were given to us as job share, 68 of them have already received full service credit anyway because we were never notified that they were on job share. Any employee that works half-time or more already received the credit. So we are talking about the 10 people. The others have taken a refund along the process. It has an actual cost of $281,000. That's in a fund of probably today in the neighborhood of $8 billion. So while the board has no position, it does appear that these 10 people were not equitably treated.
Do we need the additional contributions from the departments that's indicated in the 1A amendment? I mean, you'd like the money, of course. But
Mr. Chair, I always love money.
Right.
To be frank, these employees in the department already paid the same that every other job share got or any other half-time person paid to get the same service credit. So, you know, I think this just resolves a problem that's been brewing for many years, and it treats this group equitably with every other part-time group that we've had.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Pappas.
Then I would move that Senate File 750, House File 982, be incorporated into the omnibus bill.
Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. A little bit of housekeeping. We've got the minutes from the March 6th meeting.
Senator, Representative Kahn moved the minutes of the March 6th meeting. Discussion, hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The opposed motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, we're going to be meeting this Friday. We're going to be talking about the MRF merger bill. And I think there's one other bill that we've got on the agenda for that. Next Tuesday, a week from tonight, we're going to have a meeting on SERP. When Representative Murphy had the initial discussion with Mr. Larson, of course, there was no language at that time. There is language now. I believe that Representative Paymar has introduced a public safety bill that has that language in there. We thought it would be time to just bring it back, hear from the affected employees, so that's why it's a night meeting. I don't know exactly how that's going to shape up, but we wanted to give a forum for that one. And then Friday, March 20th, we're going to have the TRA retirement bill. And Representative Rose, by the way, your Fairmont bill will be next Tuesday night as well, too. So TRA retirement bill on the 20th. That will wrap it up. Pretty much we'll have a one more meeting at some point just to have the cleanup, you know, just to put the bill in the shape that needs to proceed. Everything else is going to be pushed into the interim. So we're getting to the home stretch here. So if nothing further, thank you for hanging around. The meeting's adjourned.